Today's podcast is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Today's show is Evan and I talking to the great Michael Pina. You've read his work at places like SB Nation and Vice Sports, and you can find him on the Open Floor podcast with Ben Golliver as well. It's a really, really good NBA podcast. Even now, I learn something every time I listen to Ben and Mike talk, so check that out wherever you get your podcasts, including Locked On Cavs. Sorry for the delay in the shows this week. I messed up audio. We had a show with Justin Rowan that was great. Hashtag release the Rowan cut, but we're going to re-record that, get that out to you sooner rather than later, and have the book club and other stuff coming down the pipeline as well. But today's show, Michael Pina from the Open Floor podcast. Also, again, you've read his work at places like SB Nation and Vice Sports. Without further ado, here's our conversation.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Joining us now, and we're very excited about this one, is Michael Pina. He is one of the hosts of the Open Floor podcast with Ben Golliver, who you surely have heard on some of the Locked On shows as well, and he's written at places like Vice, SB Nation, a whole bunch of other places. Michael, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So you recently talked to Andre Drummond about his rebounding numbers, his breakaway with the Pistons, all kinds of stuff. He has an album release, which we've seen him do this little media tour of late. But I want to go back a little bit. You wrote a piece towards the beginning of the season about how he's having this really hot start, and put some kind of context into what he was doing at the time. So we kind of set a baseline here. Where are you at on what Drummond is as a player at this point?
I mean, I think that he does a lot of good things. He's an excellent rebounder. When he is committed, I think he's solid just as a rim roller in that position and in that situation. The thing about him is, and what kind of drew me to write that initial piece at the beginning of the year, was I just didn't really buy a lot of the statistics in terms of their relevance towards winning basketball. And I think that that bore out as the season went along. And then we saw, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why he was so unattractive at the trade deadline. I think his player option for next season was a factor for sure. But when you're traded for, what was it, John Henson, Brandon Knight, and a couple second round picks, I think, you know, that haul is not very impressive. And, you know, one question I wish I asked him was, that I'm always interested in with players, is like, when you are traded, do you care what you were traded for? Like, is it a hit to the ego as well?
Right.
Because that was just that was kind of like the nadir of his career to this point. I think that trade, seeing what he was worth on the open market, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, being a center who cannot shoot threes in 2020, 2021, and the restrictions that puts on you as an offensive commodity. But then also, like, he's really just been this metronomic defender who, he has some positive qualities on that end, and he has his moments when he's engaged. But for the most part, I don't think he's someone you can say is particularly dependable on that end of the floor.
You mentioned that offensively, he's kind of being left behind in the fact that he isn't a consistent, he isn't shooting threes. But when he came to Cleveland, he's been kind of freelancing a lot, and it's been at least driving Chris and I up a wall whenever we're
freelancing is a nice way of putting it, Evan. That's a very chill way of describing what Andre Drummond is doing when he's shooting threes.
I'm trying to be positive here because we're over a month removed, and I do miss this wacky and weird team, Andre's antics included. But do you think maybe he's aware of that fact that he's kind of getting left behind, and the fact that he's a dinosaur in terms of a traditional big man, and that he's trying to maybe just add a little bit too much at this juncture in his career just to so he can remain relevant with teams going forward? Because yeah, he does have that player option you mentioned, but he does have to think about the future. And do you think that's what he's just trying to do now by shooting threes and bringing the ball up and facilitating and trying to be a focal point in the offense when there's a lot of other things that he could do that could probably benefit the team overall?
Yeah, I would agree with all that. I think, you know, to kind of excel in the NBA, you know, in today's league, you want to have as many different skills as possible. You want to be as versatile as possible. You want to be able to pass, put the ball on the floor, shoot, all of that. And for someone like Drummond, like, I just think he would be so much better off focusing in on what are already his strengths, his clear strengths, and just kind of fitting into this one particular role that I think he can be really successful at, and then not really bothering with the three-point shooting, which I did ask him about, and I kind of asked it in jest in a laughing way, and he didn't really take it like that. And so I don't know if he's, I mean, I think he is committed, I would say, to actually exploiting the 3-point line when that's just like coughing up possession. I mean, it's like almost worse than a turnover when he shoots threes. And I just remember watching the Cavs in the few games where he was there and seeing some of the threes that he jacked up. Like, I would look at the box score after a game and then watch it the following morning being like, oh, he took three threes last night. I would assume that those were at the end of a shot clock or maybe like a heave from behind half court or whatever. But no, they were like, you know, 15 seconds on the shot clock and he's just standing out there for God knows why. So I think like if he were just to accept a role like a Clint Capella or even like someone like Dwight Howard this year on LA, that is just prime for him, and you could get a lot of value out of that Andre Drummond. I don't think he is at the point in his professional maturation process to understand and acknowledge that that is probably the best utilization of his skill set, and he wants to expand it. And at some point, he's going to learn. You would think that the trade and what he was traded for and just his value clearly around the league would be a wake-up call, but it kind of went in the opposite direction.
Built bars are tasty. This is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They have 8 amazing flavors like mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, and a whole bunch of other ones like toffee almond. I love Built Bar. These are bars that are covered 100% in chocolate. They are safe, soft and easy to chew, and they're really great if you need a high protein snack on the go. For example, the peanut butter brownie one, which is my favorite flavor, has 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, only 3 grams of sugar, and only 3 grams of carbohydrates. If you're like me, then when you've been working out or when you're playing sports, you try all these other bad protein bars and they're really uncomfortable to eat, but you down them. That's not the case here with Built Bar. Built Bar is the literally best tasting protein bar you've ever had. They've, again, 8 great chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate/nut-free flavors. They're amazing. They taste like a candy bar. I love them. They're now part of my daily eating routine, and something where I can get a ton of protein quickly and efficiently and deliciously is really, really important. If you want to try Built Bar, you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to get $10 off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at builtbar.com.
Evan and I have talked about this a lot, where we look at what they gave up, which essentially was expiring contracts and guys that didn't matter to the Cavs anyway, and rolled the dice on a guy that is very talented, is certainly, I think, more talented than anyone they are going to be able to get in free agency, all that stuff. When you think about this, and you think about what he is and everything like that, would you have done that? When you consider where the Cavs are at, what they're doing, which, you know, it's that obviously that is a day-by-day figuring out what that is, considering they fired another head coach this year and everything like that. Does that make sense to you in terms of what their roster building actually is right now?
I mean, that's a good question. Look, you add talent, as you said, you're not going to be able to acquire someone as talented as Andre Drummond. And your best case scenario there is you are able to convince him to, you know, fit into being this pick and roll rim running big who can accentuate Colin Sexton and help out Darius Garland's development and that sort of thing. So long as he's not calling for the ball in the post and that sort of thing. But like, you know, you look at the Cavs, Andre Drummond is not what the Cavs needed in the short term. He's not what they need in the long term. And at the time I thought it was pretty surprising that they went after him. It's kind of like they don't really like do a lot of particular damage to themselves with that trade because, you know, the player option is the player. It's only one more year, but it was just kind of like a lateral move to me. And I don't hate it. I don't love it. It just kind of is what it is. And we'll see what happens there. But I mean, like, if you look at the weaknesses that this roster has going forward, like a center with Drummond's ability is just not really solving any problems.
I guess my question for you is then, clearly, like, we're all in agreement on what he could bring to the table that could help this young roster, like you said, as a rim runner, is that a pick and roll partner, and maybe not demanding the ball in the low post. And like you said, him essentially shooting a three-pointer is as bad, if not worse, than the turnover. Do you think he just needs more time to get acclimated to things, or do you think this is more of an indictment on Cleveland's coaching staff to let him just kind of do whatever he wants? Because it feels like, from what I've spoken with people who are monitoring the Pistons a lot more closely, this is kind of what caused the Pistons and their fans to sour on Drummond as well. It's just, he seemed kind of apathetic offensively and defensively and just kind of wanted to do what he wanted, And that kind of might be an area of concern going forward if the Cavs do have long-term plans with him, don't you think?
For sure. I mean, I do think that there is a, like, I don't want to be too critical of him, but there is a lacking degree of self-awareness here. I think that that is pretty clear. And, you know, to his credit, when, you know, before Blake Griffin came along, you know, Andre Drummond was someone who was talking about how he could do more things with the ball in his hand from the elbows and from the top of the key, and he could be a real playmaker, and he wanted to, you know, rip a ball off the glass and take it coast to coast, and he had handle and blah, blah, blah. And like, to his credit, he did some of those things before Blake came along and kind of screwed up the spacing in the offense. Like they ran a lot of the offense through him. He was, his assist numbers were up. He wasn't making awful decisions with the ball. You could kind of rely on him a little bit up there. So when he does things like that, he's probably like, I do have more in my arsenal that I'm not able to show. And that must be frustrating. But like, that's what kind of being a part of a team is all about. Like, it's about sacrifice and it's about doing what is best to get a W. And like, this is really random, but I'm reading, or I just finished reading Second Wind, Bill Russell's memoir that he wrote in 1979. And in it, he talks about, you know, before everyone murders me for making this comparison between Bill Russell and Andre Drummond, Russell says in his book, you know, when he entered the league, all he could do was dunk. And there were a lot of bigs at the time who, you know, they were asked to shoot 20 footers. And Russell, you know, he would stand out there at the beginning of his career in the late 50s and he would launch these 20 footers and, you know, they would never, ever go in. So he was trying to do things that were outside of his ability. And once he realized that that was detrimental to the team, even though it could increase his own statistical profile, like that's when they kind of took off. And it's all about sacrifice and kind of forming yourself to, or bending your own abilities into the good of the whole. And so Drummond, you know, at some point, hopefully he realizes that that's what he needs to do. And I think once he's able to figure that out, while making a lot less money, unfortunately for him, because that's just kind of what the market will ultimately dictate, I think he can be an even more productive NBA player than the one we've seen.
Evan and I, and I think the broad assumption is, and I think it's basically just a matter of fact, just needs to happen at this point. Andre Drummond is going to opt into his contract. He's going to opt into the last year of his deal. Basically means the trading for him is the Cavs free agency. Now, we obviously don't know what's going to happen with the cap exactly due to COVID-19 and everything surrounding that. Those are questions still to come. But Drummond is going to be on this team next year, at least to start it. You know, I think there's a world where he gets flipped and they just decide they don't want to deal with this. If that happens, that happens. But let's just say that he does come into next year. This is going to be a Cavs team that I would vastly assume Kevin Love is still on it, because I can't imagine anyone wants to take on that contract. Mike can tell me if you disagree. You have Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, you have Jetty Osman, you'll have another top pick, you'll have Kevin Porter Jr., and you'll have Dylan Windler. So you'll have all these young guys they want to develop, and you'll have Drummond and Love and Larry Nance as kind of like your old vets. It's kind of a weird team. The Cavs have played this weird three big lineup a little bit that, you know, hasn't quite worked, and obviously is sort of opposite of where the league is going. Drummond, I think the version of Drummond we've seen this year with the launching threes and everything and just kind of the lackadaisical play is not super helpful to that group. But is there a version next year where, like, the Cavs were obviously very bad this year, very bad last year? I'm not suggesting that there's a likely chance they're going to be, like, quality next year. I don't think that's, like, a likely outcome. But is there a world, you think, where this weird kind of team can at least not be bottom three in the league next year if this roster is sort of the same where it is? Like, can Drummond, I think, be part of something where the Cavs are not maybe as bad as they are now, but still trying to get up to where they're saying? I mean, J.B. Bickerstaff said it. They want to try to compete for the playoffs next year. It's crazy, and they say this, and I would, if I was advising them, I'd say don't mention the playoffs until you can prove you can be competent without LeBron James. But alas,
right? Yeah, they have miles to go before they're playoff caliber, and I think that, I mean, even in an Eastern Conference that is just so atrocious, there's a lot of teams in the East that have the same mindset and, you know, probably see themselves as a playoff team next year and are more pressed, I think, along their own timelines to make it. So I do not see Cleveland, you know, right now they have the worst record in the Eastern Conference. I do not see them making a jump next year. The defense has just been so atrocious for the past, even going back to LeBron's last year when they were either the worst or the second worst defense in the league, they've been just about at that level. And like, they're very young in a lot of key spots. They do not have, you know, look, maybe they acquire this person at some point in the offseason or they draft him. But like, whenever I watched Cleveland play this year, like their lack of perimeter defense, like versatile wing defenders, is just so glaring. And so many guys had key breakout performances against them because of that reason. Like, when you don't have anyone, I mean, Jetty Osman is Jetty Osman. He's like not a stopper, but like when you're putting like a Colin Sexton on a guy who's like 6'6 or 6'7 and, you know, the opposing team is these lineups where they don't have, you know, just larger lineups that are bigger at the wing positions and the off guard position. Like, if you can't guard that, you're just in a lot of trouble. So defensive versatility, I feel like, is just, it's just such an Achilles heel with this roster. And I don't see them really making any strides at all until that's answered.
So what you're trying to say is J.B. Bickerstaff and Colin Sexton and possibly the organization are getting way too far ahead of themselves on this whole process of flirting with the playoffs.
Yeah. Do you guys disagree?
No, not at all. This is a team that I think optimistically is like 2 to 3 years away at the very least of like being competent. And like that involves, you know, it involves big leaps for Colin Sexton, who is, you know, I think good, but it has a lot of things he still needs to work out. It involves Darius Garland like having more of a pulse than he did this year, and it involves some of the encouraging stuff we've seen from Kevin Porter Jr. like be real, you know, and actually also then manifests itself into something more than just kind of blips. Like he's the great Rob Mahoney called him like a do something all-star, and because he just like fouls people a lot, but he's always doing stuff when he's on the court. And but that's like he's 19 and you're hoping that iron himself out, and then they're going to add like another young player this June. I just don't think the talent is really there. The wing defender stuff is very real. Like there, when Jetty Osman or Colin Sexton or Alphonso McKinney, who is like a fine, serviceable veteran NBA basketball player, is the guy the team is like, yeah, that's our stopper. Like you're not going to stop anybody, you know. And it's like you're not to be able to defend like Luke Kennard very well, much less like Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard or like LeBron James. Like that's just the reality of it. And that's not like a great place to be. And they, you know, they haven't done themselves favors like with the John Beilein thing, like that whole thing and having to switch to Bickerstaff and whatever Bickerstaff is like, that doesn't help you either. I mean, I'm curious what you think observing from afar, like was, this Cavs season's been bad, but is it, I mean, what do you make of the whole saga of the arc of it with Beilein and then Drummond and then the Kevin Love stuff and everything that has happened from watching from afar?
I mean, there aren't a lot of teams that were more dysfunctional. They might have been the most dysfunctional team of the 2019-20 season. And it's kind of like hard to do that when you are just at the ground floor of instituting a brand new culture. Like your brand new culture was rejected immediately, which is an indictment on a lot of different people in the organization. And that's an issue that I don't know how you solve it overnight. You obviously can't, but I think one of the more interesting and like tangible causes for concern is just the players that they have kind of in their young core and whether or not they're complementary. And so, I mean, a question I have for you guys is I like Colin Sexton too. I like Darius Garland more than just about anyone I talk to about Darius Garland. And I also like Kevin Porter quite a bit. And I love that he likes Seinfeld, which is my favorite show of all time. But with just Garland and Sexton in particular, how do you build something like of substance in today's NBA when like around 2-6-1 guards, like that does not, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, are you guys kind of prepping for the day when one of those guys is jettisoned elsewhere?
Evan, you take that first.
So this has actually been a divisive topic amongst Cavs fans, and Chris and I are viewed as the, figureheads of saying that the Cavs need to figure out between Sexton and Garland that they need to bench one of them and start the other. I was more so pro Darius Garland starting and Sexton being the ultimate sixth man off the bench for the Cavs just because of the defensive concerns and the size concerns, and actually putting like a big guard like Kevin Porter alongside the other smaller guard. But I think I'm prepared for the inevitability that a lot of these players could be jettisoned. I mean, from what I've heard and what I gathered, Darius Garland is deemed the only quote-unquote untouchable player by the front office. But, I mean, with the sophomore season Sexton's had, maybe he's played himself into some type of safety as well. But it's weird because the move was a bit – I mean, I get it. Like, Chris and I have done this thought exercise a few times where we kind of just have both come to the conclusion that at fifth overall last year, Garland was the best – available players, sans Brandon Clark, if you really wanted to like make a case for him at fifth overall. Like, we get that. So the Cavs are in talent acquisition mode. You can't be too picky with who's available. So I get the pick, but the pairing between the two is super clunky and super awkward. And I don't really know what Cleveland's doing, because they are hell-bent and determined to say that these two are the starting backcourt of the future. And if you try to kind of bring up the notion that maybe it doesn't work, they quickly try to play it down and say, like, no, it's going to work. Trust me, it's going to work. And I don't know how to feel about it. Chris, how about you?
I don't feel like we have an actual read on what Darius Garland is, just because I think he's a guy who played 5 games in college. And I think we, seeing him up close, I don't think he's physically he was ready for the season. Not in terms of, like, him not wanting to be, but I think he came off knee surgery. This is a guy that, like, just looks like he needs, like, a year in the NBA weight room. Whereas Colin Sexton, like, for the fact the dude is also just a total weirdo in terms of his work ethic. Like, I don't know if you've seen, Michael, the video of him on his Instagram that he put on a story of him, like, pushing a sled full of weights around Atlanta. Like, this is just how he's spending his quarantine, is, like, just working out. Like, that's all he's doing. Like, he's just a complete, like... Yeah, he's a total, like, weirdo, and he's the guy in the team that I'm, like, most sure, like work ethic does not show up in an advanced stat, yada, yada, and I'm an advanced stat person. But when I look at this, I'm just like, Colin's work ethic is just, like, so unreal that I just, like, will not really try to, like, limit that guy. Darius is just, like, I just don't feel like I know very much about him, covering him. He's very quiet, doesn't ever say very much. He called himself the leader of the team once after they played the Wizards, and I, like, did a double take when I saw that quote. I couldn't believe it, but it was just like this bizarre thing. But I just don't feel like I know enough about him. I think it is inevitable that you do have to split them up. I can't imagine, like, either of them, like, I guess if you're the version you're looking for of them working is, like, you want them to, they've said this, they've said they watch tape, they've compared them, they've said this is, like, the end goal. It's like, you want to be your McCollum Lillard, but, like, that requires those guys both becoming very good shot makers. It requires some deference in certain spots. It requires, like, one of the reasons that duo works is that Dame is, like, willing to cede the floor on a night where CJ is absolutely cooking. And that's never, Colin's DNA is kind of just still getting, I don't know if that's in his DNA as a player as much as I like him. I don't know what that quite looks like. And I don't know if either of them are, like, if you say, okay, can they be Lowry, like, Lowry and Van Fleet? Like, well, I don't think either of them are going to be defensively, maybe Colin can, but I don't think that's ever going to be Darius's MO. But you are actually one of the first people that we've ever had on that has been like, I like Darius Garland more than most people. So why do you like Darius Garland? Like, what about him from his rookie year is interesting to you?
Well, the Dame Lillard comparison is very interesting. That's kind of the best case scenario there. You get someone who can shoot threes off the dribble from 30 feet whenever they want, who's just this ridiculous threat from the outside, who can attack the basket, the rim, who's a culture-setting leader. And, look, I don't think that Garland – I mean, it's kind of foolish to just assume that he'll get to that level of being an MVP candidate, which is what Dame is. But just in the little bits of his game and kind of now that we have kind of like that blueprint out there, I'm optimistic, that he can be, I don't know if he'll like live up to being selected as the fifth pick, but I think that with that skill set, you have something on your hands that's very valuable. And it's like pretty granular, but one aspect of his game that I feel like has already translated is just like his floater, which is one of the best floaters I can remember seeing from anyone his age. And the numbers back that up. It's, you know, his field goal percentage on floaters is like dramatically higher than it is at the rim, which is a little unusual, but and ranks really highly with some of the others around the league. So like, that's just one really small like bit of his offensive game that I've come to admire. There's a long, long way to go, particularly on the defensive end, but there's just like, there's talent that's clearly there, and there is the baseline of a particular skill set with particular strengths that have severe value in today's league. So that's why I'm, I think, a little more optimistic than most about him.
As we wrap up here, Michael, are there any, we talked about Colin a little bit, of the other Cavs kind of younger guys, is there anyone else that you like in any, is there any other guy you're like, okay, I think that guy can be an actual foundational piece, or at least has shown signs of that?
Not really. And I like Colin Sexton. I think he's, I don't really get a lot of the criticism that surrounds his game. You know, he has, you know, as a rookie, I think he was shooting a ton of long twos and it was a little frustrating, but he shot a bunch of threes this year. He had a few dust ups with Kevin Love, who was frustrated for, I think, you know, a lot of different reasons all year long. So I think he's gotten a little bit of a bad rap. I like a lot about his game, but there's just a lot of, particularly in the structure of how this roster has been built and where it's going, which is what we are already kind of covered. Like, I don't know if he's a sure thing building block for them. I mean, my question for you guys is, like, is there anyone in this upcoming draft that has you excited? I know it's not a draft class that a lot of people are fawning over, but is there anyone here that if the Cavs drafted them, you think could kind of alter the trajectory of where things are currently headed?
I would say for me, I find Killian Hayes very interesting. That's obviously drafting another guard. I think the same thing about LaMelo Ball, just because of the passing and the size at least differentiates him a little bit. And there's obviously just some real upside there. I think the guy a little lower that we, I like Onyeka Onwuku from USC, but I don't think big just makes sense considering the money they're going to be spending up front anyway. That's already kind of not what you want. And you're going to be spending a bunch on Drummond and Love and Nance. The other guy would be Denny Avija from the Israeli prospect, who I think is just the kind of guy. I don't think any of these guys are like star guys, but they're at least the kind of guys that I think can be functional. Evan, what about you?
I think we pretty much have the same, you want to call it a big board. Like, Killian Hayes would be an awesome option for the Cavs. LaMelo Ball would be as well. Don't know how Kevin Love would feel about being on a second team that drafted a point guard 3 years in a row, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But no, I like I touched on earlier, the Cavs can't be too picky when it comes to talent because they're in a talent acquisition mode, and we're all in agreement that they aren't really should be flirting with the playoffs at this point. So, I mean, like, Onyeka Okongwu is a good option. Like you said, like, there is a lot of money committed to the big guys right now, but things could change going forward. And then, like, yeah, no, I like Denny as well from Israel. The Cavs need help on the wing, like we've touched upon. And, no, I think any player is really in play for the Cavs. Like, I don't know if any of them will be, like, trajectory altering. I think maybe next year's draft class is where you start to think about that. But, no, I'm not too particular or too picky on who the Cavs pick. Because really, I don't think this roster is going to be 100% the same. I don't think a lot of these phases may be here in 2-3 years when the Cavs actually start becoming a playoff threat.
That seems about right. Michael, thank you again for coming on. We'll wrap it up here. I know you're a big reader. Give us a book recommendation for the quarantine. What's something you would say? Could be sports, could be anything. Just give us a recommendation.
Well, I already mentioned it on this call, but Bill Russell's Second Wind, if you're able to get your hands on it, it is, like, an absolute must read. I think it's probably one of my five favorite books of all time. And that's tremendous. I also just read a biography about Arthur Ashe called Arthur Ashe, A Life, which was terrific. And he's also one of my favorites. So those are just like two, I guess, sports related books that I think people should chew on. If you want to follow me on Instagram at Michael V Pina, I basically post pictures of every book I read. So, and a lot of them have absolutely nothing to do with basketball.
Yeah, that's more fun reading anyway, I think, than just reading only about basketball. I am currently in a Ray Bradbury short story collection dive, which is maybe not the best like thing to read amid a quarantine, but you know, it is what it is. But Michael, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah,
cool.
No, Ray Bradbury, great, holds up. Ray Bradbury, good. That's my hot take for today. But Michael, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. Yeah, I think your Twitter handle is the same as your Instagram handle, correct?
Yes, yeah, it
so
is.
Check him out there. Check out the Open Floor podcast. Anything else you want to plug as we get out of here?
No. Thank you guys so much for having me on. This was great. Haven't thought about the Cavs or Andre Drummond in a very long time.
Hey, you're welcome.
We could chat
welcome.
About
we
it.
Break, we spread joy. Thank you. Hey, Chris Manning here with one last thing as we wrap up this episode of Locked On Cavs. Now that you're done with this episode, tell your smart device to play Chad Ford's NBA Big Board.